This week's episode of the Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by the Autoblog Daily Digest. It's a great way to stay updated with what's happening in the world of cars in just 2 or 3 minutes every day. Ask your smart speaker for the Autoblog Daily Digest to stay up to speed with the latest car news, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today is West Coast editor James Ryswick and senior editor for All Things Green, John Snyder. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Pretty good. Can't complain.
Cool, cool.
So ready to talk about vans. Just really excited.
It's the VanCast. We have probably been waiting to do this for a while. At least I have. I'm pretty excited. We're going to get into it today. We've got the top two, if you will. James did a comparison earlier this month. This is on the 2021 Toyota Sienna versus the 2021 Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid comparison. Got to check that one out. We've got another first drive on the Kia Carnival, kind of a new multi-purpose vehicle. They're not exactly totally calling it a van, but that's what it is to the segment. Then we've got some other things. We'll talk about the Sienna, the Odyssey, the Pacifica, the Sedona, which is still a thing out there. Talk about all the different parts of the van segment. And then basically, hey, maybe you don't want a van. What else might you want? If you've got children, a dog, if you need to haul things, stuff like that. We will talk about some other things if you're already hitting delete on your iPhone or Google device because you don't care about vans. Don't worry. There's some other things we'll talk about. James has spent...
You should care about vans.
You should care about vans. As I actually wrote that 2 years ago. The lead of one of my Pacifica updates was, you know you want a van. So, just saying. That's where the position I've staked out. You do, John says. All right. I spent some time with the Mitsubishi Outlander, and John drove the Hyundai Palisade. So, we will... We'll cover other things and then just throw some things that stayed with us from the Shanghai Auto Show. That's this week. We didn't send anybody this year because we're not really flying. We're not really flying people all over the world, but I went one time. I had a great time. It's a really interesting show. But yeah, so let's talk vans. Yeah, James, you did a very, I'd say, serious breaking down where they sit in the market, the top two. Why don't you kind of take us through that real quick, just to kind of lead things off?
Well, I mean, the thing with minivans is that usually when people go about car shopping, they're faced with like at least 10 choices, probably more. If you're looking at SUVs, it's probably kind of overwhelming. Like, where do I start? What should I actually spend time looking at, and what's kind of a waste of time? The thing with minivans is there's only four of them, so you can kind of realistically check them all out, not only because of the number, but because they're actually legitimately all good. And I'm even counting the Kia Sedona, which has been replaced by the Carnival, but I feel that the Sedona, just because no one really bought it, kind of got ignored, but it was still good. It was a good van. I spent a lot of time in that, and even that was perfectly competitive. So that's the really the overarching important thing is that you should check them all out. The key differences to me come down to the powertrain as well as the second row seating arrangement, because let's talk about the second row seats. Each of them do something a little different. The Honda Odysseys has these magic slide seats, that there's three seats. The outer ones are pretty much captain's chairs. And then there's a plug-in thing in the middle that you can pull out, and it lets you put three child seats across the middle, or a child seat in the middle, and then regular people, non-children, in the outboard seats, which if you have a child seat, that's a big deal. They can also, you can also put child seats in those outboard seats, remove that middle one, and move those outboard seats inward, which is a great safety feature. Or you can move them apart, which is probably a very good parenting feature to keep your children from smacking each other. So I think for, like, and you can also install the seats and then move these seats around with the child seats still affixed to them. So that's another great thing. So that's a unique thing. Nothing really offers that. John, the Carnival has some lateral movement with the second row. Is that right?
A little bit, yeah. When it's equipped with the captain's chairs.
Yeah. So
not quite as much as the Odyssey, though.
Right. The other thing is long sliding. Even Toyota calls super long sliding seats for their 7-passenger one. This is the Carnival is similar in this way as well. Not all of them, but some of them have like Lazy Boy recliners, basically, like a footrest that comes up. And in the case of the Sienna, you can move that second row seat all the way back to the third row, like it is touching the third row. I am 6'3", and I can just completely like lay out. Nope, it is luxurious beyond belief. If you have older kids, that's a wonderful feature. The other thing I found is that even with that rear-facing child seat, moving that seat further back than you can in the Odyssey or the Sienna, allows you just easier access. You can move that child seat back and still use that door to get into the car, which is great at a curb or just to get into the third row. So that really is valuable. And it's different. So the Carnival, Sienna are kind of similar. And then you have the Pacifica. The V6 Pacificas, so not hybrids, they have Chrysler Stow-and-Go seats, which means that the seats fold into the floor, just like the third row does, and allows you to use the van for unlimited storage. Very quickly maximize its cargo carrying capabilities. The other vans, no one has come up with this. No one else offers this. I'd argue that perhaps the other vans have seen through market research that customers don't actually use it all that often, because otherwise they would have done it themselves, much as all the vans had third row fold flat ability after the Honda Odyssey came out with it. That's my argument. That's an aside. But either way, it does offer that functionality. The Pacifica Hybrid does not have that because there's a whole bunch of batteries in the stow-and-go hole. As a result, it has more comfortable seats than the regular Pacifica. They're basically those of the front seat, but they don't really do anything beyond that. They just slide forward and back a bit. So they're not that functional. So those are your second row things. All of those things, except for maybe the Pacifica Hybrid, have like unique value. And it's one of those things to check out when you're shopping to see like, oh yeah, that makes sense for us because X, Y, and Z. And now to powertrains, V6 engines. Vans pretty much all had V6 engines except for, you know, the odd base level Sienna and a supercharged Toyota Previa back in the Stone Ages. But the Chrysler Pacifica is a plug-in hybrid. It's the only plug-in hybrid minivan. You can actually get quite a lot of electric range out of that. And if you're just driving the kids to school in the morning, going to Kroger, coming home, picking them up later on, chances are you're going to stay within that electric range and you won't be filling up the tank very often. Now, when that electric range is gone, say on a road trip, the Pacifica Hybrid stops being that efficient. You really see the fuel economy coming down because you're running a V6 engine and a whole ton of batteries now have been added to the curb weight. So it kind of depends on your use case. Also, you have to deal. There's a very complicated value thing to consider in terms of when you get your tax rebate back. Are you looking at the upper trim level? Because That's kind of a, it's odd that the upper trim is better deal than the lower trim ones. Again, very complicated. I explained it in the comparison test. So there's, it's very good in some respects, but it's not necessarily the great value that it seems to be. It, again, complicated. I don't need to go into it. And then there's the Toyota Sienna. It is 100% a hybrid now. No more V6. It's, the hybrid's not an option. It's a hybrid, so it is not as powerful as the other vans. However, it is way, way more fuel efficient. I got 29 miles per gallon, 29 point something, in our, in, during the comparison test, which was quite a bit lower than the EPA number. Nevertheless, even if you just assume that that kind of crappy number I got is what you'd get, it's 7 mpg combined better than all those V6 vans. Mm-hmm. You're going to be saving hundreds of dollars per year by getting the Sienna. It's sufficient power. I mean, around town, it feels fine. And it's a minivan. Like, hello. There are the irate father drivers out there, you know, who are hauling ass all the time. But really, you're driving slowly in a minivan. And for most people, a hybrid is totally appropriate. And you're going to be enjoying a giant fuel savings from it. I think it makes a lot of sense. And really, I think that really is the main reason, most other things being equal amongst these, that makes the Sienna and the Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid our two most recommended vans in the segment. And then in the comparison test, they were so very close. As after driving them myself, I thought, you know, this seems really close. I could go with either of them. I think I'd choose the Sienna because I like its interior functionality and design better. I like driving it a lot more. It's shocking to say, but the Toyota Sienna is kind of the best handling, best steering minivan in the segment. I knew it was going to be close. Crunched the numbers, did all the spreadsheet, and the Sienna won, but by 1 point out of 200 some odd points.
One other differentiating feature to consider for customers is drivetrain, like all-wheel drive or front-wheel drive. Mm. I know it's not as important as, you know, the fuel economy and, you know, powertrain and basically seating setup, but I get asked all the time by people, other parents, you know, which minivans have all-wheel drive? And basically you're looking at Sienna and V6 Pacifica. The rest are front drive. I mean, I also tell them, you know, if you live in Michigan, we don't have, you know, a lot of hills. You're fine. Get some winter tires and you're good. But some people, you know, they really want that all-wheel drive. It's just a necessity for them as customers. And, you know, there's only two options for that.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think, you know, when you are sort of shopping for that like parent mobile, a lot of people are like, hey, give me all wheel drive. And, you know, it is that sort of like, you know, peace of mind element. So, you know, that's a big part of it, you know.
Yeah, and the you're absolutely right, John. Like, do you need all-wheel drive? Like, no, but yeah, you do get it. It is available on the Sienna. So that is a nice
and it doesn't
feature.
Really,
and you only lose 1 mpg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's basically the same. You know, it's negligible.
It's interesting.
And that's largely because of the way the Sienna's all-wheel drive system is. It's not really it's literally an all-wheel drive system, but it's not a traditional all-wheel drive system. They just added a motor on the rear axle. So you get de facto all-wheel drive.
Yeah, it's like the same as the all-wheel drive Prius and the Highlander. That rear motor just sits idle, not, you know, using any extra energy, no resistance until it's needed, and then it kicks in.
And besides the the added motor, you don't have like an axle going into the, or the, you don't have a drive shaft going into the back. And
exactly.
Yeah. Adding weight.
It's interesting too, when you look at just the segment here, they're all pretty good in many different ways. And a lot of it comes down to, you know, what flavor do you want? Do you want to be able to plug in and get that roughly 30 miles of EV range? If maybe you don't do a lot of, you know, extended commuting or trips, you know, I don't frankly know many families that don't spend a lot of time driving around, but if maybe you live close and, you know, you're willing to essentially take, you know, a V6 Pacifica for the longer trips, say up north on the weekend. But, you know, just for the daily driving, you want 30 miles just because you could maybe plug in at work and then you're driving for free. That's great. The traditional hybrid of the Toyota, I think, is, to me, that's nice because then you don't even have to invest in any infrastructure in your house if you don't want to. You know, with the Chrysler, you might say, hey, I think I want to get like a level 2 charger or something. You might not want to do that. But either way, that's could be some upfront costs for you. There is something that I think as we kind of, not to get too like high level here, but as we're in this like, hey, all these companies say they're going full EV, but we're not quite there yet. Because if you look at the data, how just minuscule full EV sales are, hybrids just in a really real world setting, just the whole set it and forget it. The car just does all the work. It's a pretty nice tool to have right now. You know, you get good fuel economy, which I think is something that's a really strong selling point of the Sienna, in addition to all of the, like the seating, you know, gymnastics you could do, which is certainly cool. So.
Well, the other thing is like, okay, we're auto blog here. So let's talk about the fact that like both the Sienna and the Pacifica Hybrid are also the best ones to drive.
Yeah.
The Pacifica Hybrid is better than the regular Pacifica because you've just added a whole bunch of electric power to the same, basically the same V6 engine. And it feels legitimately like powerful, around town and also like just on the highway. Also by having that battery in the middle of the car, you have lowered the center of gravity, you have all this weight in the middle of the vehicle. So it's balanced and it's just better than the regular V6 Pacifica. The Sienna is even better than that, just because of this, the tuning of their steering specifically, and the chassis as well. And I drove the regular Sienna. You had the XSE, the sporty version, which used to be like, you used to have to get the SE if you wanted your Sienna not to drive like a marshmallow. And now you don't. And my wife actually drove both of these vans, basically for logistic reasons, because it's really hard to do a two-vehicle comparison test photo shoot with one person. So she commented that although the Sienna felt faster, although the Chrysler felt faster, I could drive faster in the Sienna.
Yeah, you can drive it harder.
Yes. And I was like, you're absolutely right. I concur. And it's because it just feels like the sharper vehicle to drive, even with the hybrid powertrain. So it's the one I'd want to drive more often. I also like there's also a matter of perspective when you're in one of these vans. Mm-hmm. So the Sienna has this really high center console, which has functionality benefits as well for storing stuff, and we won't go into that. And then the touchscreen is canted towards you. It is driver oriented, like we all would like in a car or like an engaging SUV. That's really nice. The Pacifica also to that extent, somewhat to that extent as well, although not as much compared to the Honda Odyssey. When you climb in that and you just have this big slab of gray in front of you with buttons and there's no personality or design to it. Furthermore, it is just drab to drive, this loose steering. It is kind of depressing. It's as depressing as you kind of think a minivan would be. And although it is a supremely capable parenting gadget, the ultimate parenting gadget, it feels like this is like as exciting as your stroller. And it doesn't really provide anything for you as, you know, the driver. It kind of pushes you aside and you're chauffeuring the kids around. Whereas the Sienna actually acknowledges your existence, as does the Pacifica Hybrid. And perhaps the Carnival, John, I have not driven the Carnival, which is a ridiculous name, by the way.
The Carnival, I think you're going to like it. It drives pretty well, not quite as sharp as the Sienna, but still, you know, fairly easy to haul around. And, you know, the powertrain's pretty potent, feels pretty good. But it's got a lot of features that make it good for the driver and, you know, for adults as passengers. I especially liked the rear seats in the top trim level, the SX Prestige. They're those recliners, basically. And they're so comfortable. They're supremely comfortable. They're heated and ventilated too, which is nice. But like the Sienna, the Carnival has an infotainment screen that is canted toward the driver. It's easy to use. I mean, if you've driven a recent Hyundai or Kia vehicle, you're already familiar with the infotainment system. It steers pretty well. The steering, it feels pretty artificial, but it's sort of a nice weight and it's precise. I actually really enjoyed driving that around. I think it looks perhaps the best of all of them too. It's definitely, I don't know, it looks like a sort of a lowered SUV. James, you pointed out how much when Zach found that base one on a dealer lot, how much it looked like a Chevy Traverse. It sort of hides its minivan-ness, but it does all the minivan things really, really well. I liked it quite a bit. I can't wait for you to drive it, James, because I'm curious to see what you think about it. But
yeah,
I suspect you're going to like it.
Well, going back to the the idea that you, speaking of Kia, one of the things I liked about the old Sedona was it had like a traditional console with a regular PRND console shifter. And you sit in it and you're like, wow, I feel more like I'm in an SUV. This is not throwing the van thing in my face as much. And if you're like, oh, I don't want a minivan. I think a lot of people feel that way. Obviously they do, because otherwise giant SUVs wouldn't be as popular as they are. But you're like, you know, they really just make more sense. But I don't want to. This is why that's a good thing. Because you can sit in the Sienna, you can sit in the Carnival, you can sit in the old Sedona, and it doesn't throw it in your face. And just you just kind of forget that you're in a minivan for a second. And that, you know, you can just convince yourself that you're driving something else. And that's fine. good. I don't think that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Then you have, you know, a lot of these big three-row crossovers anyway, they're pretty minivan-y anyway. Like a Chevy Traverse. Yeah, does the Carnival look like an SUV or does the Traverse look like a minivan? I don't know. It's one of those things. It's somewhere in between. It's not like that's a cool vehicle. It's a giant family hauler. So they're both giant family haulers. I'm sorry. I don't think either one is more fashionable than the other. Why not just accept that and just get the more functional one, which is a minivan? Because the number of large family haul, like three-row crossovers that are able to not scream family mobile is few and far between. Maybe the Telluride, you know?
Yeah.
There's some luxury ones that do.
I tried very hard to get my wife to go for the Pacifica Hybrid a few years back, and we almost did it. Almost bit, but not quite. But she's minivan averse more so than I am. I think they're charming. But
nope.
She does not.
My wife drove both of them. And nope, hard nope on both. didn't want either one of them. Of course, we only have one child, and she's been driving her Audi Allroad is the largest vehicle she's had. She's gone from Mustang to Mini to Mazda 3, so she doesn't want a minivan.
She's got a type, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. This could bring us, we could wrap up the minivan segment here. Minivans are like definitely a tool if that's what you want. If you don't want it, you can obviously put your children, your dogs, your bags of mulch, any other thing you might need to haul in a variety of things. I, for example, stuffed a Radio Flyer tricycle on the back of a Honda Accord last weekend before we went to this like green space bike path downtown. Like, you can move your people and things and animals around in all sorts of things with four wheels and an engine. I'm curious, what do you guys think would be a like, you know, segment adjacent thing here for a minivan, like a non-minivan for people who might need a minivan? I know, James, you and I were talking about how the Defender is fine for parenting, and that's true. You know, if you want to be cool and get a Defender, you can do it. We actually love the Wrangler. I had a press loan a while back. This was a while ago. It was the Eco Diesel, and we actually took it to a tree lighting. We took it, like, all around. Like, I think it was Thanksgiving weekend. Eco Diesel was great. But we all fit in there. The dog fit in there. You know, there's only, you know, one child and one dog. So everybody fits in there reasonably well. Cargo hold, it's basically an SUV. So, I mean, you can parent, you can live, you can commute in all sorts of things. In some ways, that might be my choice. If I was like, hey, we need another SUV to go with maybe the family truckster, I would maybe look at a Wrangler. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, it's interesting because really that for, unless you do have just like more than two children, the minivan is really about ease. Like, it just makes your, like, it easier. Like, do you need it? No. But instead of just like, it's easier to drop the child seat in the back, it's easier to put all the crap. You don't have to like Tetris the trunk. It just plop it indiscriminately in there. You have to think harder with other vehicles. I would say something like, oh, I just had Toyota 4Runner. It's really fuel inefficient, but besides that, it is gigantic inside. It has a giant cargo area. It has a very large back seat. And let's say you're not going to commute in it. Let's say it's more like a weekend adventure thing going on road trips where the fuel economy ain't great, but it isn't going to slaughter you like if you just drove it around town a lot. Like, it can go a lot of places. Pretty comfortable, has a lot of space. That's an interesting one. Otherwise, a Subaru Outback, because that has a giant back seat, and it's giant, and because it's a car-based thing, the seat is further away from the back seat and front seat. There's more space between it than in like a regular crossover. That's good for rear-facing child seats. It's also just good for just sitting back there if you're, you know, a non-child. Also tons of, like, there's a giant cargo area. Basically, you can have the same amount of stuff in the back of an Outback as you can behind that third row of a minivan. And also, if you run out of space, the roof racks on an Outback are really great. Makes it very easy if you have a roof box or like a roof basket up there, which basically everybody does here in Oregon because almost everybody owns a Subaru Outback. So I would offer those two elements as, you know, big family vehicles that you know, do most of what most people need.
When I was in the Kia Carnival, I kept having flashbacks to the Telluride and the Palisade. It felt just like driving one of those for the most part. We'll get to this in a little bit, but I recently took the Palisade on a road trip with my two children, two dogs, and a week's worth of luggage. And it worked great for that. So my wife is in the market for a new vehicle, and we, you know, take the dogs up north a lot, and we're always, you know, bringing stuff with us. So she doesn't want a minivan, so she's looking at you know, other three row vehicles where, you know, you can fold the third row down and get that extra space. She keeps saying, should I get like a Suburban? No, I don't get a Suburban. Like they're super hard to drive. My sister has one though. And you know, you go to the hardware store and you see people loading up, they're loading up pickup trucks. They're loading up, minivans. And then there are people like my sister who, you know, uses her Suburban to haul lumber. She's always building something, or, you know, T-posts for her, you know, chicken pen or whatever. She's always filling it up with stuff, always bringing me, you know, furniture that she doesn't want anymore and things like that. So it's that's really good for that. But yeah, that one's a little extreme, you know, beyond the minivan capabilities. But honestly, like the Palisade and the Telluride function pretty well in that minivan sort of space, if that's what you need.
Yeah, no, the Suburban's huge, would be my take. I drove one last fall, and then again actually about a month ago. I mean, they redesigned the chassis is new, the interior is a lot better. It's a lot better than I think the Troop Transporter of old, if you will. But yeah, it's still a lot of vehicle. Also, it's expensive. It's $52,000. You could get a Telluride or a Palisade for much cheaper, depending on like what kind of trim you want. So, you know, there's a lot of like alternatives and just the mental, like, you know, hurdles we all go through when it's like, well, do I want to make the trade-off of, it'll be fun to drive the thing and it'll look cool, but I'm never going to go off-roading, probably, other than maybe the dirt path that leads to, you know, the family cottage, or, you know, maybe the soft roads near the beach, that sort of thing. Or do you want to make that trade of open the door, slide it in, everybody gets in? I mean, minivans to me are just like, you know, I mean, you see those old images of like D-Day or something where the trucks open up and just everybody gets out of it or something, you know, I mean, that's what a minivan is brilliant at, you know, the dog just walks in and lays down, you know, there's nothing to really worry about. Whereas if you're trying to, you know, wedge her into the Defender or something, it gets a little more complicated.
We haven't gone anywhere in a year. I don't know if you've heard this. We haven't gone anywhere in a year. You know, humanity. My son was born in August. Therefore, we've never taken like a big road trip, specifically down to California from Portland, since he was born. And so the plan was always, yeah, we'd use our Audi all road, and yeah, I'm going to get a roof carrier to expand cargo capability, and I think that should be enough, even with bringing our dogs. We'll see if I'm wrong. We're about to find out. Because if I am, we'll probably have to replace the thing. And, you know, I going back and forth, like, yeah, maybe I should just, like, what if we just got, like, some kind of cheap, like, minivan just to park out front and just have my wife get something smaller and just kind of like the commuting car. And let's not have one car, let's just that try and do like a spork thing, just split it up and get two cheaper used vehicles that serve both purposes that we need. But again, we'll see. I don't know. I do know that having taken a smaller trip in like the Defender, we went out to the coast, which is about a 2-hour drive from here. The Defender was fantastic. That really is a huge amount of space, more than a Jeep Wrangler has, in the back, kind of similar to a 4Runner, actually. That was great. Didn't have to have a roof carrier with that. Yeah, well, that's one to update.
This podcast is really getting exciting. We're going from minivans to used minivans. I don't know here. So, all right. I think we need to do a hard fade into some of the other things we've been driving. You already talked about the Palisade there, John. You took it on a good long road trip with the family and the dogs. I'm really intrigued to get into our new long-termer. We haven't talked about this new long-termer too much on the podcast, so just kind of tee it up. What do we have here?
Well, we've got the Palisade all-wheel drive, the calligraphy trim level. So, you know, with the special wheels and a couple different, you know, design things on the exterior, but, you know, fully loaded. And man, it is a great road trip vehicle. I can tell you that we drove, you know, it was 1900 miles, it's about 1600 miles down there. I'm sorry. About 800 miles down there. And then driving around down there and then about 800 miles back. And it was fantastic for it. The highway driving assist, the adaptive cruise control with lane tracing works really, really well. It was really nice on, you know, parts of the Pennsylvania Turnpike where the barricades kind of close in on you and, you know, you're curving through the mountains. It really helps take some of the stress out of that. Very rarely did I have to feed in extra steering beyond what the car was doing on its own. That blind spot monitoring system where you can check your blind spot through a camera feed that's displayed on the dash is great. There's plugs everywhere in this thing. There's a few different 12 volt plugs. There's an inverter, you know, 115 volt inverter on the back of the center console that we used a lot for computers and whatnot. There's USB ports everywhere. So we, you know, had my phone charging on the wireless charger, my wife's phone charging, Wally's, you know, Nintendo Switch charging, you know, his tablet charging so he could watch something. But it was brilliant. Just everything that you need, you can bring along and use it. It kept the family very, very happy. The sounds of nature, which Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis have been sort of putting in their infotainment system. It's just like a list of nature sounds to choose from. Those were a godsend when the baby wouldn't fall asleep. Put on some sea waves and she would... you know, she'd pass out. We ended up with that on in the background for most of the drive home. We weren't really listening to anything else. But, you know, it meant we didn't have to stop and try and get her to calm down. She was pretty content. Yeah. And then just tons of space once we were parked and got all the luggage out, you know, Wally wanted to, like, you know, move his car seat to the third row. And, you know, it's a fun car for kids. It's a fun car for adults, very easy to drive. And yeah, I think we might, it's on the very, very top of a very short list of vehicles that my wife is looking at right now to purchase. So, I think she's pretty much convinced. She hasn't driven this yet, but you know, she spent a lot of time in it, and it's clear that it fits our needs perfectly, almost as good as a minivan would. But yeah, it was a fantastic vehicle. It looks good too. I saw a bunch of other ones on the trip, and other Palisade drivers would like wave like, "Oh, there's another smart person who bought a very good vehicle. What's up?" So it was fun.
Is that the new thing, the Palisade wave? Is that where we're
okay? It seemed like it a little bit.
I took a Palisade on a road trip myself. Probably 2 years ago. Yeah, because nothing happened last year. Yeah, and we drove 4 hours to Bend, Oregon. Then we had friends who met us there, so we had five adults in the car. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so much space. Totally agree with the adaptive cruise and steering assist in that vehicle. Not only was I on a winding mountain road with it on, it was raining. And it did a wonderful job. You contrast that to like the Honda Pilot Passport Ridgeline system. That thing's kind of hopeless. It's not even close. So that's really, they have really well executed driver assistance systems.
Yeah, it worked great at night. Worked great in heavy DC traffic, you know, where you come to a stop and you'd be stopped for maybe 30 seconds and then the lead vehicle would move ahead and you don't have to like press the gas or press resume on the cruise mm-hmm. control to get it to go again. It just goes. So yeah. It was really nice.
And you know, that's something like for all this talk about, you know, automated driving, autopilot, all this stuff. And, you know, even just being able to, you know, sit there with, you know, a supervisory hand on the wheel mm-hmm. and being ready to take over, to accelerate a bit if needed, or, you know, being at the ready is much lower of a mental and physical lift than just driving the whole time. Mm-hmm. And you'll be shocked. The first time I drove, I used to live in Los Angeles and drove to Phoenix a lot to visit my parents. I'd made that 5 to 6 hour drive countless times. And the first time I ever had a Distronic with Mercedes with steering assist, I showed up and I was stunned at how like more refreshed and not tired I was. Even though I was told I had the hand on the wheel, I was paying attention the whole time. But it just did make a big difference. And that's when we're talking about these adaptive cruise control systems. That's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about vegging out and reading a magazine. We're still paying attention, but you just don't need to pay attention. You're not putting as much mental effort into it. And it really does make a difference, especially if you're on a drive where you're looking at 10 or 11 hours. You know, something like you were driving to North Carolina, or like if I drive down to Los Angeles from here. It just makes a real big difference, especially when they're well executed, because it should be said that they're not all the same. The mm-hmm. Hyundai one is excellent. The Honda one in the Pilot and Passport is not very good at all. So not all of them are created equal. And, you know, when looking for up reviews, it is important to look for these things. It's not just their existence that matters. Just like anything with a car, the performance of those features does make a difference.
100%. Yes.
Yeah, that's...
And yeah, it really does take out a lot of the stress, a lot of the tension that like maybe you're carrying in your body when you mm-hmm. have to like you think about, you know, braking distance and, you know, things like that. You do arrive much more refreshed and you can maintain better attention for longer on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself, I was able to, you know, sort of scan my surroundings more and be more aware of the cars around me when I didn't have to be laser focused on, you know, feeding input into the car. Yeah. Very good system.
The other thing is traffic gridlock. Speaking of Los Angeles. You just, the car will just inch forward for you. Like that is such a big difference than having to constantly go back and forth, foot brake. Like mm-hmm. talk about like alleviating tiredness. There you go. And then also two lane highways. We have a lot of them here in Oregon. I can tell you how much more pleasant it is to just, okay, you know, you're on a highway, you want to go a little faster than the speed limit. Everybody does that except for, you know, the guy in the Prius who wants to go two under. Fine. Adaptive cruise control, you can just lock on, just relax, let the car take it until you have the opportunity for you to take over and pass the guy.
Right.
It's just that much more like calm, like, okay, we'll get to it while you can. You don't have to worry about the brake or if they're not maintaining, someone's not maintaining speed very well. That can be extremely frustrating while you're driving. The car can deal with that. And so it it's just serenity now. Like, mm-hmm. on two-lane roads. If I knew I was going to be driving on a lot of two-lane roads, as I do here, I would absolutely, you know, go out of my way to pay extra for adaptive cruise control. If I was just, you know, if I was on a lot of three-lane highways a lot, yeah, maybe I wouldn't. But, you know, yeah.
Boy, we're really making this a sedate podcast. We're going from minivans to used minivans to... We could use these like driver assistance features so you're barely even awake when you're driving. But I tell you what,
hey, Greg, if you wanted to put V12 supercars on this podcast, that's your call. Okay. You open the Pandora's box when you stack the line with vans. So
I tell you what, one thing I think minivans, really many vehicles should include this, but minivans.
V12 engines?
Well, hey, that would get you there a lot quicker. And a few of these companies actually have V10s, V12s. They could probably shoehorn in there. But is seat massagers. I tell you what, seat massager kind of like relax you, you know, maybe you got a lot going on, you know, you got, you know, a little stress or something, you know, the commute's getting a little rough. Roll out, you know, the massagers, you know, like the Mercedes Hot Stone one. That feels pretty good. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, seems like a thing you'd want.
That is one of my wife's favorite cars. Anytime I'll have, like, you know, some fancy flagship sedan or something like that, she'll ask, oh, does it have massaging seats? But speaking of them not all being this equal, like, the F-150 has massaging seats. And really, massage is just, like, moving the large lumbar adjustment a bit. So it's just like... Like, it just goes up and down your back. You're like, okay.
It's not Mercedes levels think this is, of sauna massage, treatments.
I don't know if this is, you know, it's not unpleasant, but I wouldn't deem it a massage.
Okay. All right. So on that note, anyways, I'll talk real briefly here on the Mitsubishi Outlander. For a full review, check out what Jeremy wrote. He's our consumer editor, Jeremy Krasnewski. Very nice first drive. I briefly drove one the last week or so. It's closely related to the Nissan Rogue, which is kind of an interesting thing. It handles pretty well. It looks pretty good. I would say this. The one major complaint I have is I thought the steering was very numb. I had to do a lot of correcting as I was just kind of wandering down the road with it. So there was that. On the other hand, if, you know, you're looking for a crossover in the size and the segment, you want one that really looks pretty striking. I think the Outlander looks pretty good. I mean, there is a lot going on there. It's a very complex, maybe even a little busy design, but I liked it. I think... you know, Mitsubishi definitely takes risks with some of their designs, and, you know, I think they pull it off with the Outlander. You know, otherwise, it's pretty much just an okay crossover. It didn't really warm my heart, but it didn't, you know, chill my bones either. Just it's one of the many that are out there that, you know, you could look at. I don't think it would be my pick in the segment, but it's, you know, could be the right car for somebody. Interior was pretty nice, I'll say that. Mine came in at about 35 grand. So, you know, it, you know, right in there. It had a fair amount of things, you know, like LED lights and leather wrapped interior pieces, things like that. Six speakers, you know, fair amount of stuff for 35 grand. And when you consider the average price of like a new vehicle is about 40 grand, 38, 39, 40 grand. You know, you're getting some nice value here with this thing. So, you know, that was kind of my takeaway. We put the family in there, ran around town in it. A minivan would be easier, as is the theme of the cast here. But it was, you know, it was doable. And I do applaud them for the risks I think they took with the design. You know, it's not for everybody, but it's a good looking vehicle to my eye. So yeah.
It sure seemed, you know, reading Jeremy's piece and the... similarities between now the Rogue and the Outlander, it is very much comparable to Telluride and Palisade. Mm-hmm. How they're a common platform, and they share a lot, you know, powertrain and a lot of interior bits and pieces. Actually, in a way, it might even be closer to like an Enclave and a one of the like a GM twinning situation. There might even be closer related in terms of like common elements in the interior with Rogue, which with the old Rogue would have been bad because that old Rogue was the more you spent with it, the less you liked it. The new one is substantially better, which means that this Outlander has a much better chance of, you know, being good as well.
So yeah, I look forward to trying out the plug-in hybrid when that's available. I drove the last gen plug-in hybrid Outlander and liked it quite a bit for as basic as the car was even then. I can only imagine that with the improvements they've made with this Outlander, it'll make that PHEV that much more, something I would actually want to drive and maybe even live with. The last one was something that I could see myself owning. It seemed like a good value for a plug-in hybrid, and I like the looks of this new one quite a bit. I've even sort of gotten used to that weird light cluster up front. Depending on the color of the vehicle, it's not as bad as it. It was really jarring when I first saw it, but it kind of grew on me after that. But yeah, looking forward to driving that one.
I think in real life it ended up looking pretty good, just kind of staring at it in my driveway, you know, for the better part of a week. And there's a lot going on, but it's interesting, you know. And I mean, that's car design, you know. It's, if you don't like it, get the Rogue or get something else, you know. I mean, there's, I like it when car companies take risks and, you know, maybe make it, you know, a little bit too much for somebody, but that's okay. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. You want something more generic? Be my guest, find something else, you know. And I think a plug-in, you know, variant is, you know, right now the field still isn't enormous. You know, hybrids are growing, plug-in hybrids are growing. Full EVs, of course, are growing as far as the options and things you could get. But it's still not enormous. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, maybe you show up in somebody's search results and you're looking for a plug-in crossover and you might not maybe consider the Outlander, but it just kind of shows up, or you learn through some other, you know, means, if you will. And you're like, well, wait a minute. I wasn't going to look at an Outlander, but wait, it's a plug-in hybrid. Okay, this is interesting to me. So, you know, I think obviously that's a strong play for Mitsubishi to try to just get the word out there, if you will. So,
yeah, there's just not a lot in that segment, you know, at that price, which gives them a leg up. They're mid-sized crossovers that are, you know, in the luxury segment that you can get a plug-in, of course are, you know, smaller vehicles that have a plug-in, but nothing in the, you know, right in that sweet spot that the Outlander sits in. So,
well, you can get there's the RAV4 Prime.
That's true.
And also the Escape plug-in hybrid that exists. Mm-hmm. I haven't driven it.
I haven't driven it yet either.
I don't think we've tested that. I know it theoretically exists. the RAV4 Prime's excellent.
I haven't had a chance to drive that either. I'm looking forward to that one.
So let's close things out with quick takes here on the Shanghai Motor Show, or Auto Show, depending on how you go with it. Rather than go an exhaustive list, if you will, let's all pick something that kind of struck us this week from the reveals. For me, I really like the Lincoln Zephyr. Kind of came out of nowhere. I think it looks a little bit like a kind of a shrunken Audi, maybe an A7, depending how you want to look at it. I actually thought maybe there was a little bit of Chrysler 200 in there, and people forget, a lot of people really actually thought the 200 was a pretty good looking car. It had other problems, of course, but from a design standpoint, it looked pretty good. Zephyr name makes sense to me. Lincoln is going with like actual names now, you know, especially here in the domestic market. So I think it makes sense. If they were to do a sedan, I would 100% call it the Zephyr. And I would say, bring something like that here. You don't have to sell a lot of them. You just need to reach some customers. Have a sedan. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have three or four. At this point, I don't even care what size it is. You don't need a flagship. You don't need a compact stand. Just pick the thing that works for you, and this could be it. Now, Lincoln has not said they're going to bring it here. It doesn't sound like they will, but I mean, look at the pictures. Looks good to me. I'll throw it around the horn over to you, John.
I got to go with the Toyota BZ4X. Huge step in the right direction for Toyota. Finally, you know, a large scale battery electric vehicle for them to sell. And it'll also underpin a number of Subarus. So big news for both those companies. We don't have a lot of information about, you know, the powertrain, you know, specifics. But you know, it's coming. I think it's going to go on sale next year, I think. And, it's, yeah, it looks good. I think it looks quite good, in fact.
Cool. Over to you there, James.
I'm going to go for what I'm assuming is that vehicle's competitor, the Honda SUV e-colon. I think it might be prototype, but if it looks at the car, it definitely says Honda SUV e-colon. So I'm going to go with that. it is a great looking little vehicle. As busy and filled with vents and extraneous crap that like Honda's last generation of styling was, the new generation of styling is streamlined and clean and classic and very Honda. At the same time, it has some really cool lighting elements on it, front and back. It's certainly like the right size of vehicle, and like basically every Honda concept car, it's not really a concept. It's just a regular production car that they're totally going to make. So, you know, this is it's a car they're going to get. I would be really surprised if we don't get some version of this, because it certainly looks like the next generation Honda HR-V, which we have, or the Honda Vezel or whatever the heck it's currently known as, that we've seen. It's, you know, common to that. So I'm very excited about that. That thing looks really cool. And, you know, hopefully it goes further than the Honda regular E, the little cute little thing that's sold in Europe. But either way, it's a really neat looking vehicle, and I think shows that Honda's design is on the way forward.
Sounds good. I think we could leave it there. Good show, guys. If anybody has any questions about vans, clearly we would love to discuss it for almost an hour. So if you have van questions, please send them our way. That's podcast@autoblog.com. No spend my monies this week, but if you got one, send it over. The runway is clear. So we can leave it there. Everybody be safe out there, and we will see you next time.